This week, gold and silver flew higher along with U.S. equities, and Bitcoin climbed to 5,856 on Friday. Welcome to GoldSeek.com Radio, everyone. Your host, Chris Walczak, here with another two Muy Grande-sized interviews with top industry professionals. With the precious metals blasting higher this week, who better to have on the show than the head of Schiff Gold? Peter Schiff owns a house and a condo in Puerto Rico, which sustained a direct hit from a Category 4 Hurricane Maria, plunging all of the inhabitants into total darkness. It's just a disaster, and we've been talking about it for weeks. Plus, we discuss another new national emergency in California, where wildfires have claimed almost 4,000 homes so far. There's at least 30 fatalities, several hundred missing people. Just frightening. So again, our thoughts and prayers out to everyone in that region. You know, such national disasters that we've seen here illustrates the importance that every household do our best to prepare for unexpected events, and we know just how tough that can be here. Most folks just making it paycheck to paycheck. It can be a challenge. We also talk about China and Venezuela trading for oil in yuan and gold, threatening the petrodollar arrangement, and a big plus for the yellow metal. Then Bill Murphy from Gotta.org returns with his bullish sentiments on Bitcoin and the precious metals sector. We discuss the potential for $7,000 Bitcoin soon and Cliff High's case for $13,000 in the next few months. Basically, it looks as though the powers that be just can't corral. They can't contain this viral outbreak we refer to as the Bitcoin blockchain phenomenon. Bill and I agree that just as Ethereum blasted from $9 to $300, could we see a silver lining for silver? Could silver blast to triple digits in the blink of an eye just as Ethereum did, which of course Ethereum we view as bit silver to Bitcoin's bit gold? And I think the key takeaway is, as assets continue to merge with the blockchain and migrate, I think you'll see that gold and silver will have more free markets without the 100-to-1 or 50-to-1 leverage against us by these ridiculous paper shorts. We might have a free market, and the blockchain could just provide a free market to gold and silver, sort of pave the way, if you will, to a free market and open the floodgates on the gold and silver spigots. And our Q&A hotline, 641-715-3900, followed by extension 514049. And don't miss Robert Ian, who wraps up the show again with his must-hear report. GoldSeek.com Radio begins now with a market weather recap. Visibility virtually unlimited over the precious metals sector on news of stronger than expected CPI numbers, which turned investors away from the greenback in search of the inflation safe haven. Gold added nearly 30, finishing at 1304. Silver blasted higher 62 cents, ending at 1741 an ounce. But the precious metals XAU shares picked up 42 cents, ending at 87.30. Black gold picked up $2, up 4%, ending at 51.45, due in part to the devastation from Hurricane Harvey on the Gulf region and inflation concerns. Meanwhile, the top story impacting the markets, gold futures rocketed above resistance at 1300 Friday, adding more than 2% on news of U.S. inflation was stronger than expected, which raised questions about future Fed rate hikes. The CPI pushed the yearly rate of inflation to 2.2%, up from 1.9% on hurricane-related jumps in price at the gas pump, while the core CPI, which is sans food and energy, was essentially at the break-even point, still below the Fed's 2% target at 1.7%. In related news, it appears the retail apocalypse may be on hold for a while. Retail sales surged 1.6% in September, reflecting the best increase in almost 3 years, plus better than expected data from the U.S. consumer sentiment number rose to a 13-year high. In the FOMC meeting minutes released this week, Chairwoman Janet Yellen and policymakers noted an increase in interest rates would occur in December, but the current Fed funds futures contract actually dropped a bit this week. Odds of a quarter point rate hike in December fell to 82%, down about 5% for the week. Plus, the ECB chief Mario Draghi said on Thursday he would hold interest rates at rock bottom, as well as the Bank of Japan's head, who noted that they would keep their ultra-loose monetary policy in place, giving the Fed all the wiggle room it needs to raise rates in December. Precious metals, bottom line. Well, the explosive move this week, I think, was clearly related to the solid inflation numbers, which crushed the dollar and helped the CRB and crude oil to continue to carve out very bullish patterns. The XAU is also poised for an explosive move. In fact, the year-long consolidation could be the entry point of the decade. I agree with Dennis Gartman, who told CNBC this week that the one currency that will probably do best of all is gold, although it's really going to be neck and neck with Bitcoin. Moving on to the Wall Street Report. Nary a cloud was seen from horizon to horizon over the New York Stock Exchange, as investors viewed the inflation numbers as a benign sign of price increases, indicative of solid economic growth and potential corporate profits. The Dow Jones was higher 100 points, closing at 22,871, an all-time record and the best in 120 years. The S&P 500 picked up 4, closing at 2553 for the first time, and the Nasdaq added 16 at 6605, touching a new weekly high. The Bitcoin ETF, GBTC, actually dropped 10 points, ending at 677. I view this with a wary eye and would caution people from participating in this ETF. This should not have occurred this week. While the Komodo coin, KMD, finished around break-even at $1.80. The top story pushing the markets to new records, upbeat earnings reports from banks, and the best consumer sentiment reading in 13 years. American Express flew higher. AXP up almost 1.5%. McDonald's added about 1%. The broad market saw its best gains also in technology and materials. Bottom line on U.S. equities. Well, our favorite seven indicator greed fear index remains still in the greedy category, and I do expect the markets to consolidate in the coming weeks. However, if we look at consolidation theory, it does give us a projection on the Dow Jones, at least another 1,000 to 1,500 points higher, coming in at around 24,000. Coming up after the break, more Gold Seek Radio. Peter Schiff, chairman of Schiff Gold, located at schiffgold.com, author of several bestsellers, can be seen on all the media outlets regularly. Welcome back, Peter.
Well, thanks for having me back.
Really like your thoughts on Puerto Rico. I think we were talking before the interview, 3.4 million souls there, hundreds of thousands will have to be relocated to the mainland and elsewhere. No electricity for 4 to 6 months. Just devastated from this latest hit by Maria. Really the worst hurricane season in at least 50 to 100 years. You have recently acquired some properties there, a home and a condo, and sustained some damage. Do you have any thoughts for them or any comments on what occurred?
We had a terrible hurricane. I mean, it happens quite often. Just this one was particularly bad in that, it hit as a Category 4 right in Puerto Rico. I mean, the eye went right over the island. You know, Puerto Rico got lucky in that Irma missed. I mean, Irma was about 50 miles off the north coast. I was down in Puerto Rico a few days after Irma, and, you know, really minimal damage. I mean, no damage to any of my properties. In fact, if anything, there was one palm tree that was blown down that was in the front of my condo, which I never liked. Irma kind of helped me out a little bit, because now the palm tree was blown down. And, you know, you're not allowed to cut it down, but since it blew down, because it's on the beach, that worked out. You know, the power was out for a few days to a week, depending on where you lived, but that's kind of par for the course in Puerto Rico. Power goes out a lot because there has been problems with the infrastructure there long before Maria came and delivered the death blow. But I left just before Maria arrived, and obviously that's where all the real damage came from, was Hurricane Maria. I mean, I had to clean up my yard. There was a lot of stuff in my yard that I paid all the workers to clean it up, and I guess it was a waste, because now it's, you know, although some of that stuff would have really blown all over the place, but it's such a disaster there now, it's hard to believe that it would have been any worse had I not cleaned it up after the first one. Yeah, I haven't even been able to get back down to Puerto Rico since. And so I've seen some photographs and some movies of the outside of my house and the condo. And I mean, my houses are, you know, they're concrete. They're made of, you know, hurricane glass. So I don't have any actual structural damage. You know, you see houses in Puerto Rico that were completely destroyed because these houses are, you know, made of wood. And, you know, just like, the big bad wolf, right, the hurricane, you know, it's not going to blow down houses made of bricks or cement. But, you know, houses made of wood, I mean, they just get eviscerated, and that's what happened. You know, it's unfortunate that this has happened to that island. I mean, so much of the infrastructure is ruined, and obviously a lot of the foliage, which a lot of it will grow back, so that will come back in time. But there are a lot of older trees, 50, 100-year-old trees that were down, and obviously they're not coming back, you know, not anytime soon. But, yeah, the palm trees are resilient. They'll regrow their leaves, and a lot of the shrubs will come back, and the ocean is still beautiful. You know, it's tough life down there with no power, no running water, no internet, no, you know, cell phones, no phone communication of any kind.
Yeah, no banking, no
really,
banking.
I mean, everything is cash, but you can't even get to cash because the ATMs aren't working. It's a very difficult time for people living in Puerto Rico. And, you know, it's unfortunate the infrastructure was in such bad shape that it couldn't have, you know, better withstood this hurricane. I mean, because every town is going to, you know, you get hit by a Category 4 hurricane, you know, I mean, if your power's going out. But normally the government can get it back up, or the power company can get it back up a lot sooner. I mean, it's taking Puerto Rico a lot longer because of the condition that it was in before. And, of course, it's a government-run power company. This is not a privately owned power company. If a private company had owned the power company, it would be in much better shape. Instead, you know, it's mired in debt, right? The company is the power company is bankrupt, and they borrowed a lot of money, and they used the borrowed money to pay salaries and to pay pensions. They didn't use it to fix up the infrastructure.
No, exactly. But our thoughts still do go out to the people there, because it's really the human tragedy, I think you'd agree, that's just epic on the island. It'll never be the same.
2,000 or so houses are already, I think there's at least 2,000 structures that have been burned to the ground, whether they're residences or commercial structures. I mean, so, yeah, there's, who knows what the loss of life is there. I mean, it's probably, could be greater than it was in Puerto Rico from Rio. We don't know. There's a lot of people that are missing. So, yeah, I mean, there's natural disasters. We had natural disasters in Texas. And,
yeah.
But, I mean, Puerto Rico, it's particularly bad. And though the fact that it is an island and it's, you know, in the middle of the ocean, it's not that easy to just get supplies there. I mean, things have to be flown in. They have to be, you know, shipped in. You know, one of the things that the Trump administration could have done to at least make things a little bit easier is agree to a one-year waiver of the Jones Act. And because the Jones Act is a swamp creature, I mean, it's a terrible law that benefits a small sliver of the economy, the shipping industry, and the overall U.S. economy suffers because we have to pay much higher prices for all of our goods because it costs more to ship them. But nowhere is that more important than Puerto Rico. I mean, Puerto Rico, you know, goods in Puerto Rico cost about twice as much as what they cost in neighboring islands. And a good reason for that is the Jones Act. And in fact, even though the average Puerto Rican, their income is half of the poorest U.S. state, the cost of living there is higher, I think it's, you know, than any state. So the people earn less, but they have to spend less. And that's, you know, because of the Jones Act. So, you know, that would at least help the situation if they got rid of it for a year. I mean, they should exempt Puerto Rico from it permanently. In fact, they should repeal the entire law because the entire country would benefit from reduced shipping costs. But at least do it for Puerto Rico, given the dire straits they're in.
Keeping with the thought of higher prices, let's talk about the looming rate hike. Obviously, at the December FOMC meeting, we're going to have a quarter point bump up in the overnight lending rate. How do you expect this to impact the markets?
Well, I mean, everybody is pretty much anticipating this rate hike. Maybe we get it, depending on where the market is. I mean, if the market collapses between now and then, we won't get it. But as long as the markets are okay with the rate hike, then the Fed will probably deliver it. The Fed believes the markets don't want the hike is when they are more likely not to do it. But rates are still very low, and even if they hike them another quarter point, they're going to still be very, very low. And I don't know, even if the Fed hikes rates in December, maybe that's the last time they're going to do it. I mean, we're very close to the end. I mean, so there's not a lot of rate hikes coming. And before you know it, it's going to be rate cuts. The problem is there's not a lot of way to go. I mean, we're not that far above zero. So when the Fed begins the next cutting cycle, you know, before you know it, we're at zero. So the real tool that the Fed is going to be using is a bigger round of quantitative easing. And that's what, you know, the markets are all trying to prepare for quantitative tightening, for the shrinking of the balance sheet. What they really should be thinking about is, when is it going to start to expand again and by how much?
So you don't really buy the argument, then, that we're hearing from hawkish comments?
No, I mean, whether they want to or not, practically, it's impossible. I mean, they can't really reduce the balance sheet in any significant way. Could they reduce it by a trivial amount? Yeah, but not for very long. Because as the economy goes back into recession, what is the Fed going to do? I mean, obviously, they're going to try to stimulate the economy. And what's the only way they can do that? I mean, rate cuts are not going to provide much stimulus when you're starting from such a low rate. So the stimulus is really going to be in another round of quantitative easing. And even if they shrink the balance sheet a tiny bit, they're going to blow it back up again much quicker when they have to do QE4.
So what's the impact then on the precious metals? We've had a rough 4 weeks here after having some explosive moves. And the greenback, obviously a big factor there in anticipation of the upcoming rate hike. It had a bounce.
Part of it is the rate hike, and part of it is just enthusiasm over the Trump tax cuts and the prospect of finally getting these tax cuts. You know, kind of the same way the dollar rallied at the end of last year after Trump won the election. You know, there was a big dollar rally. People were anticipating tax cuts and deregulation. So that didn't really materialize. I mean, we didn't get rid of Obamacare. A lot of regulations that were here under Obama are still here under Trump. It's not like all of a sudden we're this bastion of, you know, laissez-faire. And I think this is more false optimism. I don't even think the tax cuts are going to be passed in their current form. And even if they are, it's not, you know, supportive of the economy. It just means bigger deficits. It just means the government is going to collect revenue by printing it rather than taxing it. And, you know, that's weaker for the dollar. If we have bigger deficits and more money printing, that is not a bullish scenario.
Yeah, speaking of the U.S. dollar, you know, China has obviously announced that it's going to, I'm quoting here, compel Saudi Arabia to trade in terms of oil. They have a new contract, which you may know, involves a combination of gold backing and yuan backing for an oil contract. Do you see this as, something that over time at least could impact the precious metals?
Obviously, it's bullish. I mean, to the extent that China is backing an oil contract with gold, it's positive for gold. You know, it's negative for the U.S. dollar. And, you know, this is not happening in a vacuum. I mean, you're seeing this type of de-dollarization all around the world. I mean, a lot of our creditors who own a lot of dollars, who have been transacting in dollars, are trying to move away from the dollar. One reason is I think they do recognize that the dollar is going to lose a lot of value over time, that it's going to cease to be the reserve currency. But I think part of it is just political and strategic. I mean, the U.S. government has been using the dollar as a weapon. They've almost weaponized the currency because they threaten sanctions with any country that doesn't, you know, play by their rules. And the sanctions are basically metered out by the dollar and denying access to the Federal Reserve system and the clearing system for dollars and shutting people out. And so foreign governments don't like the U.S. government having all that leverage over them. And so the way they have to get around it is to get out of the U.S. dollar system so the U.S. government doesn't have that hanging over their heads. The U.S. government should be smart enough to realize where its bread is buttered. And just say, you know what, you know, whatever we want to do, we're not going to weaponize the dollar. We're not going to exploit the fact that we are issuing the world's reserve currency. We are going to respect that, and we're not going to intermingle our foreign policy with the dollar, and we're not going to punish people by denying them access to the dollar if they don't do what we tell them, right? They should have that as a precedent. But once they basically said, hey, you know, if you don't do what we want, we're going to punish you. I mean, you know, if they can do it over something like North Korea, they can do it over anything. Once you get the camel's nose under the tent and you establish this precedent, our creditors like, wait a minute. I mean, you know, even though there could be people that agree with us on North Korea, hey, North Korea, these guys are bad dudes, but how do we know what in the future they're going to demand? And then if you don't do it, we're going to sanction you, right? So I think a lot of countries, you know, just don't want to wait that out. They don't want to find out. They just want to see, you know what, we just got to get out from under this system so that we don't have to worry about this future threat.
It's a perfect segue right into Venezuela. You may have read that President Maduro has just suggested oil trade in terms of Russian ruble and Chinese yuan. Is this a theme that you expect to snowball?
Yep, absolutely. And not just in some of these fringe economies like Venezuela, right? I think this is going to become more mainstream.
Okay, and when it does, then do we just see a perpetual slow decline in the U.S. dollar as we've seen over the past few months, or do we reach the watershed moment?
We will eventually reach that watershed moment. The question is, you know, from what level will the dollar collapse? I mean, how much lower will it go in an orderly manner before its decline becomes disorderly, before it becomes a crisis? And there I don't know, but I do think that that is where we're headed.
And we also read recently that China has three times the gold stockpile that we officially thought. They report sporadically, or at least did for a few years now. That seems to be changing, approaching the 9,000-ton level. So obviously they're on track to eclipse the largest reserves in the world here in the U.S. What does that portend for the yuan and the U.S. dollar?
Well, just added strength to the yuan. I mean, you just look at the direction where the gold is flowing. And that's where, you know, the strength is headed. I mean, the East is amassing gold. The West is selling it because, you know, they're basically having to sell to pay their bills. So the emerging economies are accumulating and the developed economies are selling it down because of a change in their relative financial position. And it shows you, you know, this is where the future power is. It's the people that are buying gold, that are increasing their gold reserves. This is the power centers of the future. This is where the wealth is being accumulated. Other countries that were on top but are now having to sell off their gold, you know, they're the falling powers.
You know, the commitment of traders reports really shows that the specs are a bit long here, and the hedge funds are quite long silver and gold.
Well, look, I know that a lot of the traders were very, very bullish on the dollar when the year began. In fact, it was probably the most crowded trade out there. And obviously, that's reversed. I mean, that was completely wrong. We're buying into the top. You now have more people who are now short the dollar. But, I don't think it's a crowded trade yet. And I think even the bears are not bearish enough. I mean, so I think everybody is wrong because the bulls are wrong because they're just wrong. And I think the bears are wrong because they're not bearish enough. They think the dollar will go down a little bit, but I think it's going to go down a lot. But on the gold, yeah, I do think if you look at those commitment of traders, I mean, it has been a pretty good indicator, you know, as to where the commercials are and, you know, when you might get a rally or when you might get a sell-off. But, you know, I'm not as concerned about these short-term moves. I mean, I think all this is just a bunch of noise and that there's such a big move coming that, to me, you know, $20, $50 moves, I mean, I'm not a futures trader. I'm not trading options. So to me, you know, it doesn't really matter. I just want people positioned properly so that when the gold market takes off, they're on the right side.
The primary theme is key, and Hugo Salinas Price, you know, just commented on the China link to oil and gold. He claims that this will, over time, will change everything, overturn the global economies.
The old dollar is a very important component of today's global economy. I think it's a disruptive component. I think it's doing damage. But what it is doing is it allows the United States to live beyond its means. It allows the United States to run these massive trade deficits and current account deficits. It allows Americans to consume things they don't produce, to borrow money they didn't save. And America has a standard of living that's much higher as a result of this system. Conversely, though, the rest of the world is living a lower standard of living. They are living beneath their means. They are producing but not consuming. They're saving but not borrowing. This global economy that benefits America at the expense of other people, this is going to change. When the dollar collapses, right, America's standard of living is going to collapse with it. Our consumption is going to go way down, but that means somebody else's consumption is going to go way up. Yeah, we're not going to be borrowing and spending anymore. I mean, we're going to have to start saving. We're going to have to start producing. So this is going to be a major shift in relative living standards, in trade, in economic activity, in relative valuations of currencies and assets. So these are big changes that are coming. And a lot of people are going to profit from those changes if they're positioned the right way, and a lot of people are going to lose. There's a lot of people that are going to suffer from this realignment.
Dennis Gertman recently noted that the Bank of International Settlements is attempting to suppress the gold price. Any quick comments there?
I mean, I think the markets have acted in a way to suppress the price for a while, because I think gold prices should be much higher than they are right now. Just like governments suppressed, the United States government suppressed the price of gold for a long time until we went off the gold standard in 1971, and then the market, you know, reset the price much higher. I think that the price of gold is being constrained for whatever reason, whatever forces are coming to bear to keep the price of gold down. I mean, look at the cost of mining has skyrocketed. That's why mining companies don't make any money really anymore, is because the price of gold has not kept pace with the cost to mine it. But at some point, market forces are going to overwhelm whatever's been suppressing the price of gold, whether it's a coordinated effort or just the result of markets gambling. But at some point, the price of gold is going to revert to where it should be, which is much, much higher than it is now.
What would you recommend would be, let's say, an ideal universal minimum precious metals exposure?
10%, you know, as a minimum in physical gold. And, you know, depending on your risk tolerance, you could have some in, you can then have 5 or 10% or 20% in gold-related equities, because I think they're very cheap. And I think that people that, you know, that are willing to take the risk, there's a huge reward if I'm right on what's going to happen to gold and gold stocks. But, you know, most people don't own any gold. They don't have any gold stocks. And I think they're making a big mistake. So people should buy gold. And people could have more than that. I mean, that's just kind of the minimal, you know, depending on their circumstances. And you should diversify how you own it. You should have some physically. You should have in your possession. You know, buy it right. Buy it from me at Shift Gold, and make sure you're storing it someplace safe. But you should also have gold diversified in where you're holding it. You should keep gold outside the United States. You should have storage facilities. People should have accounts at Gold Money, which is a perfect way to do it, because then you have your pick of vaults around the world. Plus, not only that, you have access to your gold immediately if you need it as a medium of exchange. You can spend your gold using an app on your cell phone, or you can access it through your debit card, which you get for free. And more importantly, too, if you're a merchant, if you have services that you're selling or goods that you're selling, you can be paid in gold. You can have your customers pay you in gold, even if they don't have gold. They can pay you in dollars, and it automatically gets converted to gold when it hits your account. And you don't have to be in the banking system. You can keep your gold in a vault, a Briggs vault with your name on it, and you don't have to have a checking account where you have to worry about the bank failing.
Yeah, Gold Money announced today that they're accepting Ethereum and Bitcoin as well now for deposits.
But, you know, the more interesting thing is to own the stock if you want to play on the cryptos, because I don't believe these cryptocurrencies are going to ultimately work. I think they're going to crash. But to the extent that there's a lot of interest in trading them, Gold Money can make a lot of money off of that. It's like, you know, the gamblers in the casino all lose, but the casino makes money. I think they're all going. I mean, if they're not backed by anything, they're not worth anything.
Think of the functionality within just Ethereum and Bitcoin alone. Imagine a money where you actually have functionality. You had a gold coin that was also a Swiss Army knife. Because, see, that's what you really have with the cryptos.
I can't even open a letter. I can't open a can of beer. You can't do anything with it.
It's not a fair comparison. Look, we're comparing two different things. I'm with you. I mean, the precious metals are the way to go. Ultimately, people have to get their funds outside of the system. There's no question about that. Still, there's incredible functionality programmed within a lot of these currencies. That's a whole different conversation.
No point in human history where the free market has created money out of nothing. I mean, the free market has created money for thousands of years, and everything that's functioned as money has always functioned as a commodity before it was accepted as money. So these cryptocurrencies are the first time in history that we're trying to make money out of nothing. Never a commodity is, and I don't think it's going to work. What if the price of Bitcoin goes from 5,000 to 500? Will you still feel the same?
And I would buy as much as possible.
But what about a lot of the people that bought it at 5,000 that never want to touch it again because they lost 90% of their money and it's not, or their purchasing power?
When they look back at it, I think a year or two from now, and it's at 15, 20, 50,000.
Believe me, if it goes from 5,000 to 500, it ain't going to 20.
Well, no, we agree. We see at least a 40, maybe even 70% haircut coming. But I mean, ultimately, with just 21 million outstanding.
21 million is not a small number, especially if nobody wants it, right? You supply a Bitcoin. But what happens as the demand goes? Even if you believe in cryptocurrencies, there's no way that somebody is not going to come up with a better cryptocurrency than Bitcoin if they haven't already done so.
Yeah, it's called Komodo, KMD. And it's totally anonymous, like Monero. I'm not going to argue with it. There is a lot of fluff there. It's very similar to 1997, 98 internet, but still, there were a couple of years left of big moves, and many of those will survive, such as the Amazon right now, okay? The Googles, the Yahoos.
Yeah, but I don't know that any of the cryptos...
Bitcoin is. Listen, it has the developers and the backbone. They really do have dedicated people. Encryption is the most complex problem. You have whole floors at the NSA dedicated to just encryption. And these people are out there creating a currency that completely resolves this issue.
Look, a currency needs to be backed by something. They've created a fiat digital currency.
Peter, you know that mining gold and silver, most difficult thing in refining, and that's what gives it so much value, that in its scarcity. You can make the same argument for Bitcoin. Energy and resources required to find those encrypted keys within the blockchain.
There's a difference, though, that you can't overlook. When you expend all those resources to mine gold, at the end of the day, you've mined gold. You now have gold. You have an element, a commodity, a metal that is desirable and has properties that people want and that gives it value. There's uses for gold. There were uses for gold long before it became money. If gold wasn't such a useful, valuable, highly coveted commodity, it never would have become money, right? So it was commodity first and money second. When you spend all these resources, when you spend all this energy to create a Bitcoin, you've created nothing, nothing of any substance. There's nothing you can do with your Bitcoin. You can give it to somebody else if they want it, but they can't do anything with it other than give it to another person. That's not true with gold. There are lots of uses for gold that have nothing to do with using it as money. And it's because of those other uses that it's able to be money. And so there's no way that Bitcoin can survive as money because there's nothing to prevent the price from crashing. Natural buyers for gold. There are no natural buyers for Bitcoin.
Think of it as just a small world, a different domain.
You know, to me, again, it's more like alchemy. I mean, it's not a VCR or, you know, a DVD. These were actual products that did things. And yes, you know, the DVRs, you know, were made out by, DVDs, right? The VHS or Beta was made. You know, Beta didn't make it. It came out first, but then VHS, and now it's all gone. And even the DVDs are gone now because people just stream stuff on the internet. And that is even my point on a cryptocurrency. Assuming that I'm wrong and cryptocurrencies can work, to think that the very first cryptocurrency is the one that's going to win is ridiculous. I mean, you know, the first one is not going to be the best one.
The early adopter argument. I mean, take a look at Amazon. Amazon was the first one. It is still the best one. And it has totally overturned the entire way.
Google was not even close to the first search engine. There were all sorts of search engines that went bankrupt long before Google showed up. Plenty of other social media companies came and went.
But have you really looked into it? Because you have to realize Bitcoin was not the first. There was 5 or 10 currencies that all went belly up before Bitcoin. They finally got it right, which brought Bitcoin to fruition. And they finally got it right with Satoshi Nakamoto.
I don't think they got it right yet either. This one will go belly up too.
I don't have a crystal ball, but the only thing I would ask you is just keep your mind a little bit open to the fact that this could be a different domain, okay? In conjunction with the U.S. dollar. Look, you're at $158 billion market right here. On track right now, current estimates, we could see a $5 trillion market. You can't ignore a $5 trillion market. That makes the stock and bond markets look tiny.
First of all, it's not about ignoring it because it doesn't exist right now. Right now, it's just a speculation that it might get that big. I don't think that that's going to happen. The bubble is big enough. Now, does that mean it can't get any bigger? No, obviously, all bubbles can get bigger, but all bubbles pop. The main money that's going to be made on Bitcoin is by the people who sell it. Yes, if you want to make money in Bitcoin, you better sell.
Peter, please tell people more about your services.
They can have an account with Gold Money. They want to trade in some of their cryptos for real money and still have the functionality. They can go to goldmoney.com or shiftgold.com. If you've got more money and you want to have a portfolio that I manage, actively manage a portfolio internationally and in stocks and bonds around the world in countries that have less government and fewer regulations and currencies that are going to gain against the dollar, You could do that at my company, Europe Pacific Capital, europac.com, europac.com, or make sure and listen to me on radio, shiftradio.com, my YouTube channel, Peter Schiff. I mean, I do podcasts, video blogs. You know, when you're on my website, europac.com, sign up for my, you know, free publications. I mean, a lot of ways that try to communicate my ideas with my audience. And so follow me, and more importantly, send me some money. Let me manage some of your money. Let me get you out of harm's way and build a portfolio that's going to do well in the environment that's coming.
Very good. Thank you, sir.
All right. Thanks.
With stocks hitting new highs, the next sector to fly could be the precious metals. GoldSeek's top industry analyst just uncovered another solid gold opportunity, Silvercorp Metals. Silvercorp's key property is located in China, the largest gold producer in the world. Silvercorp's net income is soaring, up 589%. Production eclipsed guidance by 27.5%, totaling 6.5 million ounces. Mining operations are literally printing silver at only $3.82 per ounce. AISC net byproducts credits for the fiscal year 2017. Sales increased 51% year over year, and cash flow from operations more than doubled to $80 million. Silvercorp continues to set the industry standard with reduced costs, equity appreciation, a solid dividend, and improved free cash flow. Silvercorp is uniquely positioned to capitalize on rising silver, lead, and zinc prices. To learn more about the exceptional opportunity in Silvercorp Inc., direct your web browser to silvercorpmetals.com, ticker symbol SVM in the U.S. and Canada. Remember to treat your portfolio with a core position in Silvercorp Metals.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
It's a pleasure to welcome Bill Murphy back to the show. Gold Antitrust Committee, GATA, 20 years with Chris Powell exposing the gold market manipulation. Welcome back.
Well, thanks for having me, Chris.
Great to have you. And, you know, big news coming from China. They upped their gold reserves, evidently, to a proven 12,100 tons of the yellow metal.
Seems to be there's a lot of misconception about this from what I know, anyway. What they said was, they have 12,000 tons of gold in the ground. It doesn't say that that's for their gold reserves and compare that to the United States. Entirely different issue. What makes it different is that no central bank, as far as we know of, has ever gone out and stated what they have in the ground, but it's not in part of their reserve.
No, you're exactly right. It's proven in-ground reserves. I should have made that clear. The key takeaway is they have plans to accumulate as much of the yellow metal as possible. We've had some folks here on the show have speculated, like Dr. Lieb, that it may be between 20 and 30,000 tons. We know they're the largest consumer and producer of the yellow metal, finally surpassing India. So they're kind of neck and neck there in those categories. And it's also difficult for them to export gold. They like to keep it within the Great Wall of China, if you will. Moving on, though, you know, the FOMC, we're going to have, it's a lock on a rate hike in the December meeting, that quarter point bump up in the overnight lending rate. What does this mean for the yellow metal? Anything, or have they already discounted it?
Well, one is discounted, and the whole thing is sort of silly in my book, because look what rates have done since gold topped out in 2011. And they went down to zero and to negative. And what did it do for gold? Absolutely nothing because of the rigging. It should have. It makes sense why it's a big deal in the sense of low interest rates and cost of carry for gold and all that kind of stuff. But it means nothing. It's just whatever the gold cartel wants to do. So theoretically, it could be a negative, but it's already in the market. And then at the same time, it doesn't really mean a thing. There's so many other factors that, you know, are more important in the sense of what the gold price is going to do.
Let's get into some of those factors. I've got a few here, bullet points. Let me let you start to run down your list.
There's so many, really, that over the years, that, you know, look at the U.S. debt. We can't even get a budget. Nothing's getting done in Washington whatsoever. Nothing means anything. I mean, we've had three major hurricanes, devastation, and a fire. This is probably as bad or worse than the hurricanes, and nothing matters. The stock market stays where it is. The gold price is held in check. Silver has been worse. But basically, the reasons to own gold and silver are off the charts. And if I might say, look at what Bitcoin has done with no manipulation involved. $5,200 an ounce. And good for them. But that's the kind of thing gold should be doing if it wasn't for the gold cartel.
Exactly. Cryptocurrency thing we continue to watch. I've got some pretty solid evidence for the next stop at 7,000 on BTC if we don't correct. Cliff High has made a remarkable case for 13,000 plus in the next 4 months. And now I received a message from Peter and his lovely wife saying that they're talking now in Europe of 26 to 28,000 for Bitcoin. And, you know, this is just right in line with that venture capitalist in Silicon Valley, Tim Draper. You know, he's kind of a low-key individual, but he started his own university, and he was the first one to call for 50 and 100,000 Bitcoin. Back on point here, you know, I'd like your thoughts on Dennis Gartman. You know, he's not really known as a gold bug, but he announced that the Bank of International Settlements is attempting to suppress the price of gold.
Well, I happen to like Dennis. You know, he's always, you know, he gives us a lot of grief over the years, but he's a good guy. And it's interesting that he would come out with a statement like that because he's very establishment-oriented. And Chris put out even Frank Holmes, who's very establishment-oriented, talking about central bank intervention is the only reason the gold price isn't much higher. So, I mean, it's when you look at what other assets have done, and this is one of those other reasons I left out. I mean, you look at how pitiful gold and silver are at today's prices. I mean, it's just ridiculous. And if you compare it to other assets, they should be, gold and silver should be doing what Bitcoin's doing.
That's what we believe is inevitable. But I suspect that what we're seeing here, it's really a watershed moment where the institutions were caught flat-footed by the intricacies and nuances required to accumulate Bitcoin. They can't do their typical schemes, which makes it a really compelling story because I listened to Rob Kirby. You may be familiar with his work up in Canada. He's really delved into the crypto thing, but he also realizes, well, we're going to have to live with this thing. It's going to be around for a while. So let's investigate it. And of course, he's a huge metals buff, but he points out one of the interesting aspects is that the powers that be can't find a way to corral it, to control it, to create paper money schemes around it, the virus, the epidemic, the outbreak, the way that they have with the yellow metal and silver. Because they know that gold and silver are the barometers. They are the telltale signs of what's coming with inevitable inflation and hyperinflation. They can't do that with Bitcoin because of the ledger-like system, you know, the triple accounting system involved in the blockchain. And so he makes just a clever case for the precious metals will catch fire again as they become coupled with the blockchain phenomenon, which is already going on with 1 gram and ICO that's about to go public, and they give you 1 gram of ounce per token. And so as these things take off, he sees unbelievable demand. But also wanted to move on to your thoughts on silver. Cliff High and Rob Kirby, both mega fans of silver. I'd like your thoughts.
I hope Rob's right. All I know is that we don't know how the gold cartel, and led by J.P. Morgan and silver, has been able to keep the silver price down here, where they got all their physical supplies from. I have my theory. We won't get into that now, but we're hoping and expecting the supply to keep down at these pitiful prices. And if you go back, silver was able to get to $50 in 1980, and it's the cheapest thing in the world, and in terms of an asset or a commodity. And, you know, I've said this on your show a number of times, even over the past 6 months. I think once silver can break through 21, it can go berserk and actually trade a little bit like Bitcoin has. You know, maybe not quite that dramatic, but I think, and I know Cliff feels the same way, it's going to become very volatile at some point, and the offers are just going to dry up, waiting and waiting for this to occur, and it could come in at any time.
And I'd just add to your thoughts on this. We consider here Ethereum to be the silver to Bitcoin's gold. I remember when I was first mining Ethereum just about a year and a half ago, it was at $9. And we thought, oh, this is a ridiculous price. It's run up tenfold. You know, what could it do now? In the blink of an eye, it was at 50. Now it's at 300. If we just stick with the parallel, in less than a year's time, BitSilver, let's call it, Ethereum, shot from $9 to $15. Sound familiar? To 300, there really could be that moment, you know, where you cross the threshold in the next 12 to 24 months.
No, I just hope you're right about that comparison. I think, as they said, gold and silver are so cheap, it's all because of the bad guys, the gold cartel, and they're due for some kind of explosive move. It's no reason for them to be down here except for the manipulation, price suppression, and hoping that with all we've discussed here today and what's going on in the world, that they're just going to take off out of nowhere.
You know, one other thing here, I brought this up to my guests this week, the same topic. Clearly, we see mutiny, if you will, away from the greenback. Firstly, we read recently that China, and I put this in quotes, is trying to compel Saudi Arabia to exchange oil for their new, you know, yuan gold. We think this might be big. And then Venezuela announced yesterday its preference for the ruble and yuan over the greenback with energy trading. Well, look, Russia, Venezuela, Saudi Arabia. I mean, that's a trifecta. If this mutiny continues, what might that portend for gold and silver?
Well, obviously, I mean, it's related in the way that if the dollar gets hit, goes into the tank, it's going to obviously help gold and silver, and it'll could be a tremendous factor. And we should get an idea about what China's going to do next week, because they have their five-year Congress thing and that they do, and that's usually when they make certain statements about what their plans are. So if some of this Chinese dollar stuff and oil or whatever is going on that's been talked about is for real and going to happen, we ought to know sometime after the 18th when that their big meeting gets underway.
Your targets are roughly 21. If we can cross 21 on silver, look out above. What about for the yellow metal?
I don't know if there's as much a key point as there is in silver. I suppose 1,400 would be a big deal for gold.
And, of course, we'd like to see it back to its former 1,900 and change highs in short order, you know, following the break of the 1,400 to 1,500 resistance area. We've been building up some steam, you know, for the past 2 or 3 years.
That's a good point. I mean, you've got tremendous long-term basis in gold and silver that can propel both precious metals to much higher prices from a technical viewpoint. I mean, there's a lot of power being built up or haven't been built up in both markets.
Please tell people more about La Metropole Cafe as well as Gata.
Go there and sign up for a two-week free trial, see if it's of value, and then go to Gata.org and get on my colleague Chris Powell's list and see if they enjoy what he puts out. So, again, we've been doing this, as you said, almost 20 years, and I can't wait to win the day.
The only thing I'd point out is that the XAU last week did find a floor, at least find its footing relative to the bullion. I think we've had an orderly retreat, at least in gold, over the last month. It's what I would expect on a false breakout. It's just more winding up in a complex inverted head and shoulders. It's just waiting for that tipping point. Bill Murphy, thank you.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
With stocks hitting new highs, the next sector to fly could be the precious metals. GoldSeek's top industry analyst just uncovered another solid gold opportunity, Silvercorp Metals. Silvercorp's key property is located in China, the largest gold producer in the world. Silvercorp's net income is soaring, up 589%. Production eclipsed guidance by 27.5%, totaling 6.5 million ounces. Mining operations are literally printing silver at only $3.82 per ounce. AISC net byproducts credits for the fiscal year 2017. Sales increased 51% year over year, and cash flow from operations more than doubled to $80 million. Silvercorp continues to set the industry standard with reduced costs, equity appreciation, a solid dividend, and improved free cash flow. Silvercorp is uniquely positioned to capitalize on rising silver, lead, and zinc prices. To learn more about the exceptional opportunity in Silvercorp Inc., direct your web browser
advisor to SilverCorpMetals.com, ticker symbol SVM in the U.S. and Canada. Remember to treat your portfolio with a core position in Silvercorp Metals.
Gold Seek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
This is Robert Ian with GoldSeek.com Radio. Are you aware that 30 of what are known as global systemically important banks, called GSIBs, hold more than $47 trillion in assets and represent more than one-third of the total assets and loans of thousands of banks globally? That is a fact, and a significant one that comes directly from the newly released Global Financial Stability Report from the International Monetary Fund. According to the IMF, these 30 GSIBs have an even greater role in certain key global financial functions. Collectively, they comprise 70% or more of certain international credit markets, like syndicated trade finance, market services, and the international financial infrastructure. GSIBs are central to the international financial system, and all GSIBs share systemic importance. I trust I have your undivided attention as to the significance of these global financial participants, because, in short, one-third of these titans of finance remain on shaky financial ground, due in large part to what the IMF calls legacy issues. Problems in even a single GSIB could generate systemic financial repercussions. And 9 leading global banks are named, which include Citibank, Barclays, Deutsche Bank, Societe Generale, UniCredit Group, Standard Chartered PLC, Sumitomo Mitsui Financial Group, Mizuho Financial Group, and Mitsubishi UFJ Financial Group, all of which are believed likely could deliver subpar profits in the medium term. The narrative within the report itself tends to use positive language to describe the situation, with section headings like "Progress toward sustainable profitability is uneven." Uneven is an understatement. The report says uneven progress in tackling legacy charges, business model adaptations, and group structure has led to varied profitability, as well as a mixed outlook across GSIBs. It continues with, "However, even with these improvements and better outlook, analysts expect one-third of the GSIB assets, about $17 trillion, to generate below-sustainable returns in 2019. The report states, "Some banks continue to grapple with legacy issues, while others, particularly European investment banks, still face the fundamental problem of defining and executing profitable business models. An environment of low domestic interest rates also affects the profitability of Japanese GSIBs. These banks seek continued international expansion to offset compressed domestic profitability. And supervisors must bear in mind that such expansion increases currency and maturity mismatch risks. Problems in even a single GSIB could generate systemic stress. So supervisory action clearly needs to remain focused on business model risks and sustainable profitability. Let that sink in. Problems in even a single GSIB could generate systemic stress. And one-third of GSIBs, 9 global banking institutions, are at risk, which equates to $17 trillion. And problems with any one of these institutions could set off a systemic financial crisis of unanticipated proportion. And this is simply the risk profile the IMF has publicly discussed. What else is on the horizon that is not being publicly discussed? An event, any event, no matter how far removed in Europe, China, Japan, the U.S., or anywhere else, could put into motion a daisy chain of events that circle the globe and leave the world wondering, what just happened? Why didn't anyone tell us or warn us? Knowing the risks that 9 out of 30 GSIBs are vulnerable, and that problems in just one of them can create systemic risk for all of them, which means it will create dramatic changes for you and I, just as the crash of 2008 did. How are you going to mitigate risk in your own life and your own business right now? The clock is ticking and time is running out. And until next time, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com, reminding you to follow us on Twitter at ConquerChange. Thanks, Chris.
Okay, Robert, thanks for another excellent installment. Well, that wraps up this week's GoldSeek.com radio episode. For two new big guests, be sure to check out next week's show. Until we talk to you again, have a great week.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Thank you.